Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the latest of our reaction pods. And we really want to know if you're enjoying these, by the way. We are still, during the course of the week, endeavouring to sit down and do a proper lengthy discussion on whatever the key issues surrounding Spurs are here on the Tottenham Way. But we're also doing a few more of these reaction pods. I'm Marcus Buckland. Dan Kilpatrick is with me. He's just got back from Birmingham, having watched Spurs lose again on the road, this time by 2-1. Aston Villa's sixth successive home victory. And it means that the two sides are now level on points, 57 points each. It's extraordinary to think that as recently as March, Tottenham were 14 points better off than Aston Villa. It could yet come down to goal difference in the battle for European football. And bearing that in mind, although it didn't yield a point today, that penalty for Harry Kane late on might yet prove to be significant. And we'll talk about the European situation in a moment. What happened with Julian Nagelsmann on Friday night and where that leaves Spurs in terms of their hunt for a new manager. But first things first, Dan, just a reaction to the 2-1 defeat. I watched the game as well. I have to say I was exceedingly underwhelmed for about 65 to 70 minutes, when Mason made some changes and Kulusevski came on, Spurs started to create some openings and then somewhat sickeningly conceded the second goal. And it wasn't until the closing stages when Kane got one back that in very typical Tottenham fashion, there was a bit of hope. There was a possibility of an equaliser late on. It wouldn't have been deserved though, would it?
Hi, Marcus. No, I don't think it would have been. And just to pick you up, I think the 14-point stat was when Emery took over, but I may be wrong. I mean, if Villa have clawed back 14 points since March, that would be really damning. But I think that's from October.
No, I stand by my stat. Well, it wasn't my stat. I read it a short time ago.
Okay.
If it's wrong, you're going to have to do some editing on this podcast. But
I'm not doing any editing, so we'll have to go with it. The whole occasion felt really flat. Me, the performance felt flat. Mason tried his best, but even he seemed a bit flat afterwards, with the exception, I should say, of the away end. I'm not just kissing ass, but I did think Spurs fans were good again, and they've been very good on the road in kind of difficult circumstances recently. It just feels to me like everyone really associated with the club just desperately wants and needs the season to end. I don't know if that's how you're feeling. I mean, it's strange because kind of on paper, Spurs have something quite big to play for. They're still in the mix for European football and they could get Europa League or Conference League or nothing, and that's going to have a big bearing on next season. But I almost feel like now most of the fan base are just so beyond that. They just don't really care, and that just feels so secondary and unimportant, and they just really want to feel a connection with the team and feel like the people running the club have a plan and feel like the players care and just feel things. And it's not really about coming sixth or seventh or eighth now. It's about bigger things than that. And it doesn't really feel to me like that process of feeling stuff again and feeling positive about the club can really begin until this season is over. I think even if Mason's in charge next year and the squad's pretty similar, I think it will feel like a reset. And I just think everyone's desperate for that reset now. And I really got the feeling today, with the lack of intensity and the flatness, that it's just better for everyone if this season ends. And we've got to do Brentford and we've got to do Leeds, but I think most fans now not really asked about exactly where they finish on the table. And we'd just like to get through to the end of May, frankly.
Well, yeah, I agree with that in many ways, certainly in the short term. I think we all could do with having a couple of months off, stop this self-flagellation every weekend. But equally, you've got to look at the long-term picture. You had a fantastic article in the Standard earlier in the week about Harry Kane and where you thought he might or might not be going. And on one of the little pods as well with Tom, there was a sense in that podcast in particular that it emboldened me. It gave me hope that Kane is going to stay at the club. But I still think it would make a big difference if we are in either the Europa League or even the Europa League Conference, which Kane himself did say was an opportunity to win a trophy. So because of that, I was still getting riled today. It did mean something to me. And I was looking at the mathematics at the end of the game. And the fact, I think that the big hopeful factor from a Tottenham point of view in terms of qualifying for Europe is that Aston Villa's last two games are not easy. They've got to go to Liverpool, who of course are still in the hunt for a top four place. And then they've got Brighton at home, last game of the season. And Brighton, of course, with those games in hand, despite their horror show against Everton the other day, can still finish above us. So that gives us some hope if we do the business, which is a big if, against Brentford, and then away to Leeds, who may still be fighting for survival on the last day of the season. So it's going to be tight. I do get your point. Yeah, there's a flatness. But also today, Dan, the thing that struck me was just the lack of coordination throughout the team, from the defence through to the midfield. And of course, we know that Ryan Mason's been trying different things. But you've also made the point that he's had a couple of free weeks now on the training ground to try and bed something down. And then the strike force, I mean, Richarlison for me did absolutely nothing today other than get offside on several occasions. And yet I kept thinking, Dan, that Villa high line was a potential route through for Spurs. I kept thinking back to that game against Southampton a couple of years ago when Kane and Son destroyed them in the second half. And yet, I don't know, it was decision making. I felt that Son was really lacking confidence today when he went through on goal. He probably knew deep down that he was offside, but it just didn't happen. And I don't understand that, Dan, because these are pros and yeah, they may be pretty fed up with the way things have gone, but surely before that game today, they were up for this. They wanted to build on the Palace win and end this season as positively as possible.
Well, when I said last week that Mason would have another week on the training ground to iron out the teething problems in attack that we saw against Palace, I think that was true. But I think it is a different proposition playing a Palace side who are under an interim coach themselves and are just secured safety and didn't have anything to play for at home, against playing a Villa side who are playing for European football, which would be a great result for them given where they were in October when Emery came in. And I honestly did just think it looked like a team that had been playing under a top coach for 7 months against a team that has had three coaches since mid-March or whatever it is. You know, Spurs just, when they had the ball, didn't look like they knew how to get through Villa, how to play through them, and struggle with their press. And so often it just looked like it was going backwards. You know, one of the wide players would have it and it would just end up with Fraser Forster or with one of the centre-halves. And the plan, as you said, was obviously to break the high line and get Kane a bit deeper to be the playmaker and get Son and Richarlison running behind. But the patterns of play just weren't slick enough to beat that offside trap, which has obviously been pretty well honed by Emery under the last... over the last 7 months. So, yeah, perhaps I was a bit naive to say that, you know, it would definitely be better this weekend after a week on the training ground, because you're playing a side that's had months and months. And I get that some fans will say, look, it was only Villa. You know, Spurs are better than Villa. You know, they're not all that. But I think it was, you know, an example again of the benefits of proper coaching and proper structure and organisation. And Spurs just looked... No, I don't blame Mason for this at all, but Spurs, you know, did at times just look like a rabble, which frankly they are. You know, they've had three different managers in a couple of months against, you know, a pretty well-drilled team that has a clear objective in mind, has a plan, has a target, knows what they want, you know, against a side that's frankly just kind of drifting toward the end of the season. As I said, I think a lot of fans just want this season to end. I'm sure a lot of the players do as well. And I take your point about professionalism, but it's kind of hard to blame them in a way. I suppose that the interesting contrast there is that Mason won't want the season to end, really, because he wants the permanent job, and he's kind of lamented the fact that he doesn't have enough time to make an impact. And, you know, again, as I said on the reaction pod last week, the frustration is that had he been given the full 10 games after Conte was sacked, I think that's probably just about enough time to to judge him on results and judge him on performances. But as it is, it's just quite hard to make a call on what he's doing at the moment. He came in and when Champions League football was more or less gone after that horrible result in Newcastle and confidence on the floor. And it's just, then now it just feels like, what can you do really?
Yeah, I've been impressed, I have to say, with what Mason has done in a very short space of time. I like the quote that he came up with prior to the Villa game where he said the first time he was put in charge a couple of years ago, he hoped he would do a good job. This time around, he says he knows he can do a good job and he's not afraid to make changes. And you know, he brought on Kulusevski relatively early in the second half. It was good to see Bissouma come back onto the pitch as well. I only hope that next season we see the real Bissouma, but you're quite right to highlight Unai Emery. I mean, this is the first time that Villa have done a double over Spurs since the 95-96 season. I'm hoping that 14-point stat I gave you earlier is right. What I do know for a fact is that Villa have picked up 45 points from a possible 69 under Unai Emery. It is a remarkable transformation and he's bubbling. No wonder his record in the Europa League is quite extraordinary. So I heard him saying after the match today, his dream is to go into Villa's final home game against Brighton with a chance of getting into Europe. Because if they do, and they're going to back him in the summer, then who knows what Aston Villa might do at that level. Two things I wanted to ask you, because you were at the game and I was just watching from a distance. But the second Villa goal, we've spoken about Romero and how, you know, we love him as a player, but he can be rash and his decision-making at times is questionable. It seemed to me that he, again, was diving in a few times. Somebody suggested to me afterwards that he actually got the ball when the free kick was given that led to the second for Douglas Luiz. But I wondered what you made of Romero's performance altogether, again, from a decision-making point of view as much as anything else, and also whether you think that Fraser Forster should have done a little bit better with the free kick?
Yeah, I think on Romero was another poor performance. So I think he was also kind of at fault for the first goal in that he lunged in the build-up and was kind of always trying to get back from there on in. I think he lunged in, didn't get the ball, he was on the deck and then was scrabbling to get back when, was it Bailey, I think, crossed for Ramsey to open the scoring, and then obviously he gave away the free kick. I've got to say, I've got to do a classic kind of manager in a flash interview kind of comment, so I haven't seen that one back. We had monitors in the press box, but I was kind of too busy writing to sort of properly see the replay. So I'm not sure if he got the ball or not. But yeah, Romero's just the kind of player I think just needs the reset that I mentioned earlier. You know, he kind of needs to be working under a proper coach. And I'm not saying, again, I'm not saying Mason's a proper coach. It may well be Mason, but he needs to be working under a permanent manager who you know, can get the best from his obvious talents, because, you know, he's clearly, and we've had this discussion, Tom Barkley and I had it on this podcast a couple of times now, but he's clearly not playing as we know he can play. He's not making these poor decisions for Argentina at the World Cup, for example. You know, he's playing beneath himself, and that's a kind of mental issue, but I think also down to the state of the team. And yeah, I think Foster should have probably saved the free kick. I mean, it wasn't exactly right in the corner, was it? He palmed it into the top corner, but it was pretty central. I think Foster's a pretty steady influence on the side, but he's not the kind of shot stopper that Lloris still is. But he's got his pluses, and he kept Spurs in the game at 1-0, really, because he made a couple of saves from Buendia and I think someone else, I forget, a 1-0, which kept Spurs in it.
Yeah, I like Forster, I have to say. I tend to agree with you that perhaps he could have done a little bit better with the free kick, but there's a commanding presence about him. Having said that, I think we all expect or know that Spurs are going to go out and attempt to sign another goalkeeper in the summer. No attempts on goal in the first half either. So it really was a pretty miserable watch again. And of course, Dan, going into the game, there was all sorts of concern, confusion, anger following the news that broke on Friday night that Spurs have totally ruled themselves out of the running for Julian Nagelsmann. Now, you'll know more than me about this, but what has gone on there and what led Spurs to make the announcement as clearly as they did on the eve of another important game?
Yeah, well, I think by now it is kind of no secret that Spurs' position is that they haven't spoken to Nagelsmann and they don't intend to speak to him. There's obviously respect at Spurs for Nagelsmann. They went for him in summer 2021 and didn't pay him then. But the noises coming from the club are that they don't feel he's right for them at the moment. Now, it is important to say that, you know, there are always kind of many different sides to this kind of situation. We don't know yet, or I certainly don't know yet, kind of what Nagelsmann's camp thinks of Spurs' position on it, and whether he would have a different take on what's happened. But you know, that those are the noises coming out of the club at the moment. But clearly he's not in the frame anymore. And I think the club's sort of position on it does raise some big questions, because, you know, if they're saying we haven't spoken to him, we don't plan to, then the big question is, why not? You know, he's obviously a top young coach who's out of work at the moment. He might cost quite a lot still, because there might be a compensation package to agree with Bayern Munich, but there's no kind of club standing in his way. So he's in a, you know, pretty decent position from Spurs' point of view if they did want to try and speak to him. And he's obviously, you know, a very exciting coach who kind of ticks a couple of boxes, in that he's a name who's managed Bayern and made a big reputation for himself in Germany, but he's still very young, and you know, there's a sense that he's kind of hungry and still up and coming and not peaked in his career, which is the type of coach Spurs need. And like a lot of people that know more about Nagelsmann and about the job he did at Bayern and his other clubs than me have raised doubts, which I think are legitimate. I think there are question marks over whether he's the right personality. I think there are questions over whether he is the type of coach who could affect the kind of bottom-up cultural change that Spurs obviously need, and that Kane and Mason have both called for in the last few days. But even so, you'd think Spurs would want to speak to him and find out his plans and learn a bit more, at the very least. So it's obviously a bit strange. I do suspect that we will hear more, you know, possibly from Nagelsmann's camp, you know, possibly just from Germany, about, you know, what's gone on. And it may well be the case that Spurs haven't spoken to him, but that's not to say, you know, that sounding out doesn't happen of his camp and his people, and that maybe discussions have gone on through intermediaries or whatever. Again, this is just my opinion. I'm not happened. But yeah, I think there's more. I think there's not the last we've heard of this. But as a final thought, it is kind of strange that he's not ended up at Chelsea or Spurs, because I think when he was sacked by Bayern at the end of March, you'd have kind of fancied him to end up at one of those clubs. And obviously, Chelsea, he held talks with, and apparently they kind of mutually decided it wasn't right. And Spurs, you know, saying that they haven't spoken to him, but for whatever reason, have decided, you know, he's not for them. So, you know, that's an interesting angle of it. But I'm surprised, and I think this increases the heat on Levy for me. It puts him under more pressure.
Totally. I mean, when I heard the news, I tweeted that I sincerely hope that Daniel Levy knows what he is doing, and I wrote that with absolutely no real confidence in thinking that Daniel Levy does know what he's doing, and that we could be heading towards a repeat of the summer of 2021. And we all know what happened there. We ended up with Nuno, et cetera, et cetera. And following that news about Nagelsmann, some other names have recirculated. I did, and of course, you can throw a name in quite easily, as I did a few weeks ago with Vincent Kompany, with a source that wasn't quite as reliable as I was led to believe. Hey, it's not impossible that he might still turn up. But now I've even seen Graham Potter's name mentioned, Brendan Rodgers, of course, Luis Enrique. And I will say Luis Enrique, not just Enrique, otherwise Tom Allnutt will come on and can get very angry, because as he rightly told you the other day, it's the full name Luis Enrique. But it seems that he's faded away from the picture a little bit. Are you sensing that anybody else in particular is starting to get themselves into pole position, or whether Spurs might say, hang on, let's just stick with Ryan Mason now?
Well, I think as you just said, I think the concern is that Levy and Spurs don't have a clear plan and don't really know what they want. And the club, I think it's fair to say, are kind of desperate to avoid a repeat of summer 2021, but it's kind of starting to feel like there are parallels there. You know, if you consider the fact that I think it's fair to say that Spurs, you know, liked Tuchel before he went to Bayern. They certainly were strongly linked with Nagelsmann, whether they were kind of in for him or not. You know, it's already there's already a sense that maybe some targets are getting away from them, and that was obviously the story of Summit 2021. Look, just final point on Nagelsmann. I think with Pochettino heading to Chelsea almost certainly, he felt to me like the kind of one candidate who would soften that blow for fans. I think had Spurs hired him, they could legitimately say, well, we didn't go for Pochettino because we've got a more exciting, younger, you know, more impressive tactician. That's not true of all the other names in the frame. That's not to say they would be worse hires than Pochettino. It's to say that on paper, I don't think they're going to excite the fan base from the start in the same way. So it's a bold move to seemingly not go for him. I mean, in terms of the other names, I haven't got any advance on what kind of most people already know by now. Postecoglou, Slot, De Zerbi. You know, these are all names that have been kind of widely mentioned now. I think, you know, Ryan Mason, you know, suddenly seems maybe not as likely as any, but you know, certainly, despite results, strangely, more likely now than he did when he was appointed. And to go back to what I said about Mason earlier, it almost feels like results are kind of not irrelevant, because it would be very hard to make a case for him if Spurs lost the last two games, but almost secondary to the feeling he's creating, you know, the sense senior players are getting and the mood he's creating in the club, that almost feels more important to me than
Yeah, but Dan, I just cannot see Tottenham going down that pathway, because as well as Mason has done, and I think we'd all agree he's got a really bright future in the game, I think if after all the names that have been mentioned and the possibility that Pochettino is going to come back, and I heard, I think Teddy Sheringham has been talking the past day or two, saying that Poch has just been waiting for the call. He'd much rather go back to Spurs than go to Chelsea. And if at the end of the season, Pochettino is at Stamford Bridge, and Spurs having been linked with Pochettino, Nagelsmann, Tuchel, De Zerbi, etc., stuck with Ryan Mason, and this is not a criticism of Mason, but I don't think it would look right, and I think Levy would be, I think, nervous to go down that particular route, even if it might turn out to be an inspired move. But the bottom line is, as we bring this particular pod to a close, Dan, we've got two games left. There is still a chance of getting into Europe. But in terms of this managerial situation, I think it'd be fair to say that we are no nearer to reaching a conclusion than we were a month or so ago when the whole sorry business started. And I guess we can only hope that some form of definite action is taken, because what we want then is for Spurs to start. Well, what I want is for Spurs to start very quickly in the transfer window. How many years have we waited until the last minute and then got not necessarily who we wanted in? Let's get a manager in right at the start of the pre-season, make two or three signings early on, and look as though we know what we're trying to do come the start of next season.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The sort of scenario I think everyone hopes is playing out is that Levy and the club have not called Pochettino and not bothered to interview Nagelsmann because they've got someone lined up at the end of the season or next week who they think is better, and it's suddenly going to come out that whoever it is has got the job and the club will feel totally vindicated in everything they've done. But I don't think anyone really has any confidence that is going to happen. And I think we'd both love to be proved wrong on that. I think all Spurs fans that are kind of questioning Levy in the club now would love to be proved wrong on that. But it just doesn't feel that way at the moment. It feels alarmingly like 2021. And I agree with you. I mean, to go back to kind of Villa, to sort of round off this circle, really, they are a club, as Tom Allnutt said last week, that will obviously be ahead of Spurs in their planning for the summer as it stands. And, you know, given the way Emery's improved them and given the way Spurs have played this year, you know, the gap between those two clubs now is not particularly significant. Spurs still have Kane. I'd still give them the edge. But you know, Villa have a strong transfer window and Spurs have a chaotic one again and finish this manager search chaotically, then you wouldn't really be feeling very confident that they're going to definitely finish above the likes of Villa next season. So yeah, we said it before, but it's a big moment for the club. They're at another crossroads and they can't afford to get this wrong.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to go and get a couple of beers because it's been another disappointing Saturday. But Dan, thank you. That's Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard. I'm Marcus Buckland, and we'll be back with one or both of the Toms during the week, by which time maybe something significant would have happened behind the scenes. And if not, we'll look ahead to the final home game of the season against Brentford. This is the most horrendous thought. Could it be Harry Kane's last ever game at Tottenham? It's not an impossibility. So join us then, and please let us know if you do like these reaction pods. All your thoughts, your reviews, etc., are of a big help, and you can find the Tottenham Way podcast in all the usual places. So get in touch with us, let us know what you like, what you don't like, and we will endeavour to further improve this particular service. But for now, from Dan and from me, Marcus, it's goodbye, and come on you Spurs.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Military veterans and active duty service members, you could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at MyComputerCareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.